Joining us to talk about that and how that's really going to change the face of Iron Range politics is Aaron Brown of Minnesota Brown, a frequent guest on the show. You can find his work over at minnesotabrown.com. Aaron, thanks again for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brett.
Yeah, so let's talk about this leadership shakeup that took place over the weekend. So why do you think this happened? Because in the piece you recently wrote for Minnesota Brown, you talked about how since the labor movement on the Iron Range has really shrunk over the years, Tom Bach has basically had to spend a lot of political capital on projects that, yeah, do sometimes benefit the unions in northern Minnesota, but maybe at the expense of some of the interests of Metro DFLers.
Yeah, that's it's a big historical story, I guess. Mm-hmm. But really what you have to look at is when the union isn't growing by adding new members, new fields, new areas to add union contracts, its only real effort to protect and help its members is to try to ensure that there's labor, that the labor is being done. And particularly with the building trades unions, which are a very powerful part of the labor movement, and it's also the part of the labor movement that Senator Bach is most associated with. He's a lifelong officer and member of the building trades unions with the carpenters, and it's just in his DNA, really, the building trades union. Well, they're, especially on the range, but really anywhere, what they want are projects. Projects mean jobs. And so that has been the focus of Senator Bach, and particularly when it comes to the range in his home district, he wants to see projects because his closest constituents want those projects. Well, it gets complicated because, you know, the economy is changing, the labor, there's fewer people in unions, and that's having all kinds of effects on the workforce, arguably bad effects. And so Senator Bach, in his efforts to really defend his you know, what the trades unions want with any project they can find at all, is running up against the, you know, pushback on whether it's a smart idea to mine, you know, everything you can dig up in northern Minnesota, or whether pipelines are the right choice. And different policy arguments are running into this very fundamental "we want jobs" arguments. And so that's really the balancing act that Senator Bach had played the whole time he was in the leadership position in the Senate DFL. And now, you know, at long last, the scales tipped, and Senator Susan Kent led a successful, I guess you'd call it, revolt. And so here we are.
I do want to talk about the history of this because, especially as someone like me who's just lived in the metro area his entire life, it's important to point out, and you wrote about this too, how unions in the Iron Range area are not one monolithic entity. They definitely are different sets of unions, as you talked about,
yeah,
whether it's trade unions or industrial unions. And really, over the years, it's been that alliance between the industrial unions and the trade unions that led to that strength of, well, labor in northern Minnesota. And you talked about how quality of life issues like education and the environment were always more of a part of the industrial unions. Well, you know, the trade unions were a little bit more, hey, we actually need jobs. So talk a little bit about that history and that alliance we saw over the years between those two groups of labor.
Yeah, there's a long labor history here. And, you know, you might hear these terms, AFL-CIO, and you might have heard that. You might see them endorsing candidates, for instance, every election cycle. But that's truly the one big union. The AFL-CIO is two different sides of the union question coming together to make that. And as you point out, the trades unions, the AFL side, were the older unions. They were the ones that were often controlled by skilled craftsmen, typically. You know, people who really had to practice and apprentice at a craft to become good. And they started out of that old guild tradition. I'm going back to middle school civics now, but the guild tradition started that trade side. Well, the industrial unions were the what were often in a derogatory way called the unskilled workforce, the people who had to work in the factories and do the more dangerous and less rewarding work of the Industrial Revolution. And they finally unionized. And what they wanted was obviously pay and benefits and all the things that, you know, you would want out of a job. But because there were so many people there, you know, their interests became kind of one and the same with their whole community. And so when you see, whether you want to call it liberal or even, frankly, some of the more radical or even socialist thought in the early 20th century was coming out of those industrial unions. Now, it's not to say that, you know, one side is good and one side is bad, or that they've always had altruistic notions in their minds. You know, they're both, you know, unions of workers trying to protect those workers' interests. So they've always had that in common. But you really see the difference, and you're seeing it in the when these unions are being crunched. And I know a lot of times in the metro area, people look up kind of with a little bit of scorn or derision at the economic arguments of, say, the Iron Range labor type leaders that you see in St. Paul. But I'd really caution that there's a scarce resource mentality going on in northern Minnesota because the region has not shared in the economic prosperity that the whole state has enjoyed. And that's true throughout rural Minnesota in general, but it's just as true here in northern Minnesota and on the Iron Range in particular. And so this kind of tug and pull against the economic trends is running against a cultural change. You know, there's fewer people work in mining and more people work in service industries and work in, non-union type jobs. These unions are trying to protect their own. And I recall talking to Senator Bach when he ran for governor now, almost 10 years ago now, and he said he was trying to avoid what he called the managed decline of the labor movement. But unfortunately, I don't know that he or anyone has been able to stop that managed decline, and the result has been a closer relationship between unions and management, and as we're seeing, a less close relationship between unions and the DFL, the Liberal Party that once was its true home.
Yeah, let's talk about what the modern Iron Range union worker looks like, because it's very different from years past, where, as you were alluding to, well, labor and, well, the corporations are largely one in the same, where now they kind of do share those same interests.
Well, let's talk about, like, say, a mine, for instance, a taconite plant that produces iron ore to make steel. These have existed on the Iron Range for 115 plus years now, and they have typically employed, you know, in the old days, they employed lots and lots of workers who engaged in very dangerous, dirty work to extract large amounts of raw material that the workers themselves did a lot of the labor in extracting. And what we have now is a much more, it's safer, which is really good, and that was a product of union activity, and it pays exponentially better, which is another product of the labor movement. But it's also become much more efficient in that corporations have figured out how to reduce the number of jobs, and automation has taken over where once a human being would have to push or pull or dig. Now very, very large machines are doing that digging and moving of material. And so the jobs that exist are much, much fewer. They pay better,
right,
but they're much lower in quantity, and they are also much more require training beyond beyond just how to run a shovel. You know, that you have to know how to operate computers, automation systems. There's a lot more going into these jobs, and a lot of the people that mines hire are now college graduates. And in fact, if you go around the world in some of the more sophisticated steel mills around the world, they're almost exclusively hiring mechanical engineers to run these things. So it's a very different workforce. It's certainly middle class, upper middle class workers. And so when you hear about the miners on the range, you're actually hearing from what is up here, the upper middle class, just like, you know, the suburbs often are accused of, you know, all these rich people or somewhat rich people, you know, with their somewhat guarded view of the world, trying to run things. Well, now, you know, up here, we've got our upper middle class as well that has that kind of role. And the great quantity, the great majority of northern Minnesota, and I think a lot of communities, are these non-unionized service workers, gas station and hotel mm-hmm. employees. These are the workers that comprise, and healthcare workers, CNAs, as far as the eye can see. And these are the workers, typically non-union workers, who are probably suffering the most in this economy and in this system, but have now, you know, A, they're being frozen out of, you know, unions. There are just no unions coming in to represent them, and there's poor understanding of what unions are in that demographic. But their needs are no longer the concerns of the unions that have existing contracts, because those unions are trying to protect their own, which I understand, which makes sense. But that pressure is right at the apex of this thing. It's right at the pivot where we're trying to function as a coalition, and that coalition is not operating the way it should.
You're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, as we're speaking with Aaron Brown of Minnesota Brown, not only about how Tom Bach was ousted as the Senate DFL leader, but also the larger question of what happened to the labor movement in northern Minnesota. And there's another aspect I want to move on to, Aaron, and you wrote about this as well, how tradespeople actually do spend part of the year laid off. So I could understand from their perspective when you have like a mining project or building some sort of plant, well, guess what? That's a year-round project, and that also means, well, maintenance that's going to constantly be needed yeah. as well. So I could understand why that would actually be very appealing to them.
Yeah, I mean, if you talked, I have friends who are electricians and miners, and I grew up here, so all my friends are working in some of these kinds of jobs. And, you know, there was a power plant that got upgraded here a few years back, and I remember a friend of mine, he worked out there for 2 years, and at the end of it, they got a jacket that showed, you know, they had worked on that project, and that's the kind of thing that's very exciting for people who are in danger of being laid off. You know, a lot of construction laborers know that you get laid off in the winter, but, you know, when large numbers of people are laid off more often than that, or when you start to see workers who are laid off intermittently through the construction season, you know, like I said, the economic growth in the state is not even. The economic strength right now is in the metro area, in the suburbs, and in the core of the big cities. There's all kinds of construction going on. You just have to drive around and you see it. And the laborers in those areas are getting work, and that's great. But out in greater Minnesota, it's a different world. You know, we have projects, and they're much more important when we get them because, you know, it's literally the decision over whether we can stay here or not for a lot of families. And when you're culturally connected to a place like this, that becomes very personal. And so I hope there's some understanding, and it would help for everyone to understand each other, that, you know, when some people show concern about the environmental impact of mining and what that might do in a water-rich place like northern Minnesota, for instance, and that's a valid concern. But so, too, are the concerns of people who want to work and continue a way of life in this area. And that's, you know, there might be no way for both sides to be happy about everything, but there is a very real sense of importance to those issues for people here. And that's why, even though the Republican Party hasn't moved an inch on most policy issues, workers are willing, you're seeing it in the election results, workers are willing to entertain voting for Republicans. Obviously, Pete Stauber enjoyed a victory in 2018 and will likely be reelected in 2020 on the back of the promise of work. And that's, you know, one of the fundamental things in politics that people want.
Yeah, people always vote on their pocketbook issues. I mean, for me personally, I'm always going to vote for someone who I think can actually lower my health insurance premiums. That's an important issue for me. And if you live on the Iron Range, yeah, the Republicans might not always share your interests, but you know what? They actually are promising jobs with these mines that are being built. So I can see how sometimes, yeah, those DFL arguments you hear about environmentalism or other issues do actually fall on deaf ears.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sitting up here as you know, a liberal on an island that I see being washed away in a lot of ways. You know, I see a lot of my neighbors now supporting more conservative candidates, both in primaries, but also switching over to the Republicans. But I think that there is a way forward, an argument that, for the DFL.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for the DFL to make here, but it almost feels like people aren't done being angry about what's happened to the economy. People aren't done being angry about the loss of those good mining jobs that, you know, from the baby boomers on, from the baby boomers through the 80s, I should say the baby boomers' lifetimes. So when baby boomers were born after World War II until they approached retirement age, which is right about now, there is this fixation on what was actually one of the greatest booms in the region's history when the taconite industry started up and it got a huge amount of investment. And so it kind of clouded the living lifetime of this region into thinking that it could always be that way. Well, the 80s happened, and then the decline of the 90s and early 2000s happened, and now the region is experiencing this contraction. And people just, they wonder why it's not as good as it used to be. And I understand that, but on the other hand, it was never going to stay that way because of the nature and the change of this industry and the nature of employment in general. Automation is the biggest issue of our time, and it's really hard to get anybody but eggheads to talk about it because all of these mining jobs are in danger, not just from the closure of a mine or the failure of to open a new mine, but because a lot of the jobs, like truck driver, for instance, or shovel operator, are going to be replaced by machines in our lifetime. And so that is something, you know, that is – so I think, you know, if you can lead what's next, you are going to be the leader of the future. But I think a lot of people are not yet ready to embrace that level of change.
It's interesting, too, because there's a lot of parallels between the Iron Range and even what's happened in, well, what used to be a once strong union state like West Virginia. It's almost looking like we're kind of paralleling what's happening over there.
It's an echo, because if you look at what happened in Appalachia in the 60s and especially in the 70s, you saw the steelworkers basically get run out of the state by the fact that these U.S. Steel backed out of the coal industry, or in many cases did, and to keep the mines running, they ended up having to go with a lot of small private investors who didn't want unions. They were more conservative. They needed to run closer to the margin to stay open, so they broke the unions. And that's what's, you know, I've already written this in months prior. This is the risk here. You know, these union jobs that we're trying to protect are in danger, which is why, you know, the unions should not only be concerned about the work, but about the record, the labor records of the companies and people we're dealing with. There's a real risk that a lot more than just the proposed 300 and some permanent jobs at PolyMet are at stake here. There's a lot more than that. There's the whole, you know, labor structure of the region.
Well, let's move on to a couple of larger questions before we have to wrap up here, Aaron. And I want to talk about what specifically could be happening with Tom Bach and some of the other Iron Range DFLers, because granted, well, it's a smaller and smaller group of politicians that actually are Iron Range DFLers. Is Bach likely to play nice with the DFL, or could he potentially, I don't know, maybe even move to being an independent or a Republican? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Tom Bach has been not heard from in a couple days.
Yeah, I've heard nothing from him whatsoever, right?
Yeah, he kind of retreated, I think, back to his Lake Vermilion lair, and we're waiting to hear what he really wants to do. I'd believe anything. I don't. People have even suggested a party switch. I doubt that with Senator Bach, because he has invested a lot of time into DFL issues. He is, you know, progressive on a lot of issues that that Republicans would not really care for him to be around on. But I could see him, you know, it's coming up on an election, you know, whether or not he runs for re-election as a member, or as a backbench member of that caucus remains to be seen. He could choose to, you know, adopt the role of just representing his constituents, and he may or may not be helpful for leader Kent and her efforts. You know, it's hard to say. I know there were a lot of hurt feelings among range DFLers in this decision. with the leadership change, what everybody's going to do. Obviously, you know, some of Tom Bach's biggest supporters, David Tomasoni and Eric Simonson, both, you know, they both are applying for the PUC position.
Right.
You know, so they're looking for work, essentially. So there could be a lot of change coming in these DFL seats that, you know, the Senator Bach had enjoyed such an alliance with. And that could, it's a dangerous thing for the DFL because not all of these seats are necessarily easy to keep, and all of them are potentially open to a rather significant internal DFL, you know, battle that could rub people the wrong way or hurt feelings somewhere along the way. But I don't know. On the other hand, let a little time go by, you know, let the specter of our political system and situation with, you know, President Trump and the deep partisanship we're seeing kind of settle in across the country. It's ultimately, by the time next November rolls around, as I think I told somebody, I don't think there's anybody out there who was not planning to vote for President Trump, but they might consider it because of, you know, how mean those guys were to Tom Bach. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know many people like that. People are going to walk into their parties and whatever happens will happen. But I think there's a lot of hurt feelings, a lot of wounds being licked back home, and you know, the tale will be when session starts and all these actors start working together again, and we'll see what happens.
I think you hit the nail on the head here too, Aaron, is that, yeah, when people walk into that voting booth in November of 2020, they're really not going to be remembering, oh yeah, well, he used to be the DFL Senate leader. I think that's very unlikely. Unfortunately, Aaron, we are up against the clock, but really do appreciate you joining me on the show today. A really good discussion, and highly recommend folks go out and read your post over at minnesotabrown.com about what you wrote about the history of labor unions on the Iron Range. We only touched on a few of those topics, but there is a lot of good stuff there. So, Aaron, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks much. Thanks for having me.